Well, as we all know, we have a very, very divided country. But you know, I think I've discovered a subject that everybody completely agrees on, and that is death. How many of you are big fans of death? How many of you are pro-death? No, actually, everybody feels the same way about death. You know, they asked Woody Allen once, "What do you think of death?" He said, "I'm strongly against it." Death is relentless. It's exhausting. Death crowds us in from every side. You know, I've shared with you before the story of my friend and roommate from college, Mike Stavlin, who wrote a book in which he writes about the birth of his twins, one girl, one boy, and then the subsequent death of his four-month-old son named Will. Will was born with several health complications that made his short little life here on earth a living hell. And Mike, who's also a pastor, he writes about preaching one Sunday after he lost his son. His sermon that morning was on the problem of unanswered prayer. And he had all his thoughts organized. He's ready to go. And as he's waiting for the song to be played before he gets up to speak, this imaginary sarcastic speech comes rushing into his mind. He said it went something like this. My pastor friend writes, "So you think you have intellectual difficulty with prayer? You wonder how it works. Wow. That must be so difficult for you. Have you ever prayed that your child would be healed in utero? Have you ever asked God for answers about how best to care for your child and heard mostly silence? Or felt the heartbreaking agony of having prayers for healing answered only with an even longer list of physical maladies? Have you ever washed his clothes for the last time, deeply disappointed that they would lose their unique smell? Have you ever given away a huge box of his diapers or taken his crib apart and put it in the closet because you just couldn't stand to look at it anymore?" You see, it's horrible. Death, it torments us. I'll never forget 4 years ago in this church, we were approaching Holy Week, March 18th, when the Nestler's little baby girl, Faith, was born. Along with her twin Dalton, of course, only Faith was struggling, you know, failing to thrive because of placenta insufficiency. And their precious little girl, she lived, she fought, she struggled there in the hospital. I'll never forget it. It was like they were in a tug of war as death tried to take her from them. And they held her and they loved her and they prayed for her. And the doctors and the nurses, they all fought for her, hour by hour, day by day, night by night, they fought for her. And 12 days later, her little body succumbed. She died. Death is a bully. I mean, who picks on a little baby girl or a little baby boy? We hate death. We despise death. And the sting of death doesn't recede quickly at all. You know, I had a woman come to my office several years ago now. She was new to the church where I was serving at the time, so I didn't really know her story. And she told me that she had lost her son to a car accident. And then she began to weep. And by weeping, I mean heaving with deep sobs there in my office. And when she finally collected herself and was able to speak again, I thought, surely this had just happened. You know, a few weeks ago or possibly a couple months, because here she was still all torn up about it. And so I asked her, I said, "You know, when was it that you lost your boy?" She said, "It's been 15 years now. 15 years. And she was crying like she had just heard the news for the very first time. So we hate death. Now, some of you are saying, "I not only hate death, Pastor, but I also hate this sermon so far." Yeah, you know, sheesh, it's Easter, man. You know, lighten up a little. You know, there's this strange verse in the Bible. I've been teaching the Bible for all of my adult life, and I don't think I've ever locked in on this verse before. It's found in Ecclesiastes, you know, the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, the axioms of God's truth. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1. Listen to what it says. It says, "A good name is better than fine perfume." Okay, I agree with that. So far, so good. A good name is better than fine perfume, but then listen to this. And the day of death better than the day of your birth. What? Did you get that? If you belong to God, your death day is greater than your birthday. Get out of here. That can't be possible. I mean, the day you die, either you're old and you're worn out and you're decrepit, or you're young and you're attractive and your life is, you know, tragically cut short, or it's your birthday. I mean, are you kidding? That's an awesome day. That's the greatest day. Your whole life is before you and everybody is oohing and aahing and celebrating. How could your death day be better than your birthday? There's only one way. There's only one word: resurrection. It would require resurrection. So here are two women, Mary and Martha. Their brother is dead. And you know, they did everything they could to help him hang on. You know, they tried to heal him, to make him well. They did everything they could, but it's a sad day. It's a sad, sad day. The whole community is there grieving with them. And then Jesus shows up. And you know, the most amazing thing happens. I mean, they believed in resurrection someday, but you know what? They had no inclination what would happen. Resurrection that day. You know, a lot of us in this room may believe in resurrection someday, but you know, I'm angling for resurrection this day. Because you see, there is a resurrection that has to take place before you die. You know, this is a very special Easter Sunday for me personally, because do you know that tomorrow, Easter Monday, will mark to the day 33 years ago when that resurrection took place in my life. And I was resurrected from the dead. Wow. God evidently had some interest in rescuing a sinner like me. I'm still not quite sure why, but wow. Wow. How about you? How about you? Let's take your sermon outline and let's talk about what needs to happen for your death day to be greater than your birthday. And just a little Easter treat for you guys, just two little points this morning. Sweeter than peeps, perhaps. You're welcome. The first point is that you have to see Jesus for who he is. Who is Jesus? What has he come to do? Well, to see Jesus for who he is to see his glory. And the Bible says, and the Word became, in other words, God became flesh. He became flesh. He walked among us. Jesus was God in the flesh, and we beheld his glory, full of grace and truth. To see the beauty of Jesus, the glory. Now, there are two sisters here, and we're going to look at how they experienced the glory of Jesus in two completely different ways. The first sister, you know, her name is Martha. And Jesus comes because they've summoned him to come. And Martha is going to see the glory of Jesus in his power. Martha's going to see Jesus' glory in his power. Martha runs out to meet Jesus. And you know, both the sisters, they say the same thing when they encounter Jesus. You know, Lord, if you had been here, our brother would not have died. Now, do you think that sounds like a complaint? Do you think like maybe they were saying, come on, Jesus, we sent the word. You had plenty of time. You know, why didn't you take the red eye? Why didn't you move this up a little higher in your to-do list? You know, well, you should have hustled over here and got this done. Well, I don't think that's what they were saying. I think they were saying, you know, we did everything we could in order to save him, everything we could. But, you know, you're the only one who could. And if you'd been here, he'd be alive right now. And you know what Jesus says to Martha? I want you to see that Jesus challenges her, completely different than what he does with Mary. With Martha, he challenges her. She says, you know, if you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. Jesus says, your brother will rise again. You know what she said? I know. I know he will. She's a good Jew. Most Jews believed in the resurrection. It's not just a Christian belief. Jews believed that there would be a future resurrection of the dead. And she's a good, faithful Jew. She says, I know. I know the resurrection. Someday, someday out there in the future, in the final judgment, there will be a resurrection. Jesus, I know that. And Jesus said, no, you don't. I'm not talking about someday. I'm talking about what? Today. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection. You believe in a resurrection someday. No, resurrection, just walk straight into your village today. I am the resurrection and the life. If anyone believes in me, though they die, they will live again. And anyone who believes in me, he said, they will never die. Now, how is that possible? What Jesus is referring to is that there is a part of us that has to be resurrected beyond our body. Obviously, as a result of sin and rebellion against God, our bodies do grow old and they cease to function and they die, and we need new ones if life is going to go on. But you see, there's a deeper problem. It's an internal problem. There's an illness inside of us, and it's not just our bodies that are broken, our souls are broken. We're separated from God. We're trying to find life any way we possibly can without God. And so it is, we're broken inside. And you know what? I'll bet everybody in this room would admit that we are not what we are supposed to be. You know what we're supposed to be? Loving. We're supposed to care more about our neighbor than ourselves. We are supposed to care about the poor and the marginalized in such a way that we would share extravagantly. We are supposed to be patient with our kids and our spouses and our coworkers in all kinds of ways. We are not what we are supposed to be. We're stingy. We're narcissistic. We think mostly about ourselves. And so something has to happen inside of us to heal what is broken inside of us. We have to have an internal resurrection, not just a new flesh. We need a new soul. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. If you have me, if you're joined to me and my power is at work inside of you, I give you my spirit. My spirit is inside of you in such a way we'll never be separated. You'll never die. I will make you alive in a way that you will never die. That's the resurrection. And that can actually happen today. That's the potential. That is the power that he can bring into a human soul. He can make the judgmental and the arrogant humble. He can make the weak and the timid courageous and fearless. He can make the addicted free. He can make the anxious actually confident and secure and content. I mean, what did he say to Martha? He said, I am the resurrection and the life. Do you believe that? Do you know what he would say to you today? Do you believe that? Do you? And you might say, well, you know, if I encountered the risen Jesus, sure, I'd believe. And I'm telling you, you're encountering the risen Jesus today. We've read about him. You're hearing about him. He's in this place. You didn't come to this Easter service by mistake. The risen Jesus just might be saying to you today, this is your resurrection day. And then that God thing inside of you, it's not going to go away. It's not going away. And you may have been stiff-arming me, but it's time. It's time for you to come home. It's the power of God to resurrect, to claim a life, to say, you know what? I'm going to change you. I'm going to change you from the inside out long before death. And so Martha experiences the power of God, the glory of God. But Mary is completely different. You know, Mary says to Jesus, okay, if you were here, my brother wouldn't have died. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't say a word to her. He just what? He weeps. She experiences the glory of God in his compassion, in his tears. And so we see that Jesus is the God-man. He's the God who can resurrect the dead. And he is the God who comes and he cries and he weeps. Jesus wept. Every kid who's ever gone to Sunday school over a period of time is required to memorize this verse. It's their favorite verse of the Bible, right? Jesus wept. You know, I got that one, you know, right? What's your favorite verse? Jesus wept. What ought to be your favorite verse? Maybe the most powerful verse in the Bible. Here is God. Here's your God weeping. Some people would say, oh, well, he saw Mary and Martha, and they were taken with grief, and so it grieved him too. But he knows what he's about to do. He knows he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead, so why didn't he say, okay, all right, enough. Enough of the waterworks. Just give me a minute or two to dial up this miracle, and we're going to turn this whole ordeal into a party. Done. Now, why didn't he go that route? Because you see, Jesus doesn't just see Mary and Martha and the villagers. Jesus sees Auschwitz. Jesus sees black people who have been lynched for decades and decades. Jesus sees all the atrocities all throughout history. Jesus sees terrorist planes flying into the Twin Towers. Jesus sees Santa Fe High School and Parkland High School and Marshall County High School in Kentucky. He sees the Tree of Life Synagogue. He sees Las Vegas and the Pulse Nightclub and Sandy Hook and on and on and on. He sees it all. And he's grieved. It's his tears. It is the God who weeps. He cries, "Have you seen it? Do you know him? Have you seen him in his glory? Do you know his love?" Now, I'm not asking, you know, if you assent, if you give mental assent to the doctrines of Christianity. I'm asking, have you fallen in love with this Jesus? Do you know him in that way? Do you know just how beautiful he is? Are you drawn to, are you captured with his beauty? See, people in church, you know, many say, well, I believe in God. I believe in God the Father, maker of heaven and earth. I believe all the doctrines. That doesn't mean that you've fallen in love with Jesus or that you have come to grips with his love for you. You know, when Jesus went and cried with Mary, you know what the crowd said? Look at how he loves him. Do you know that's how he loves you? Do you know that on Easter of all days, you ought to say, see how he loves me? One last thing, because we have somebody else to deal with in this story. It's not just two sisters, but it's Lazarus himself. So here's the second point, is that we not only discover who Jesus is, he's the God-man who comes into the world, and he meets us in all of our brokenness and all of our sin and all of our pain, and we see his glory, but he also came to do something. He came to defeat death. He came to conquer our greatest enemy. He came as our representative. He came as our older brother to defeat what we could not defeat. We have an older brother who fights for us. And this is what we see in this passage. In verse 33, we read these words. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and greatly troubled. The translators have a lot of problems with those two words, greatly troubled. And they all translate it a little differently. But you know what it means, essentially? In sight of Jesus, he was enraged. He was disturbed. He was angry. He was mad, fighting mad at what was happening here. He was enraged with death. Now, again, some people say, hey, you need to relax a bit here because, you know, death is normal, right? It's just a normal course of events. You know, you're born, you grow up, you reach some sort of peak, you know, and it's like, you know, you go over and you're going downhill now, and then eventually you die. It's normal. It's just the way it is. Well, let me ask you a question. That's not how Jesus felt. Death is not normal. We were not created to die. We were not created to be separated from those we love. This is not the way it's supposed to be. This is an intrusion. This is a break-in to what God has planned. I mean, just think about it. You know, if you came back to your house, if you were away on a business trip and you came back to discover someone had actually broken into your house and they'd taken the lives of your entire family, a slaughter in your own house, if that happened, would you really stand outside with the police officers and gather around, hold hands, and sing the circle of life, right? Oh, let's just sing from the Lion King, shall we? Because it's just such a beautiful circle of life. You know, we're born, and then we go into the soil, and a new plant comes up. No. No, you would be horrified. That's what Jesus is, right here. He is enraged at the death of his friend. He is enraged at the death of Lazarus. He is horrified for what death has done. You know, actually, after the Parkland shooting last year, there in South Florida, after all these tragedies in our country, people always say, well, our thoughts and our prayers are with you. Our thoughts and our prayers are with you. But after the Parkland shooting, people said, you know what, screw your thoughts and screw your prayers too. We're tired of thoughts and prayers. Do something. Somebody do something. Well, Jesus comes because it's time for somebody to do something. He takes on our enemy. He approaches the tomb. Lazarus has been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, that you need to know that number's significant. Did you know that in a Jewish superstition, do you know what they believed? They believed that the body still had a chance for 3 days. That's what they believed. Because they believed, and this is superstition now, that a spirit hovered over the body for 3 days. But if it got to the fourth day, sorry, over. You know, the dead is dead at that point. Nothing good is going to happen. So when John says it's 4 days, that's significant. Lazarus is dead. Jesus says, take away the stone. And he cries out, Lazarus, come forth. And at that point, all of human history hangs in the balance. Did you know that? Your eternity hangs in the balance, because if nobody comes out of that tomb, go ahead, enjoy your ham today, but don't ever go to church. Another day of your life, because the whole thing is worthless. But Lazarus, he comes out. He walks out of the tomb, and death is put down. Jesus took on death, our enemy, and he won. You know, I am a sports nut, I'll confess, and I love the great iconic calls of announcers of sports history, like Al Michaels. You know, that could have been a good one, right, for John 11, for this moment. Like, remember Al Michaels, 1980, Lake Placid Olympics, when the U.S. men's hockey team did the impossible, and he cried out, do you believe in miracles? That's right, that would have worked, right? This is a miracle. But I like one better than that. One of my all-time favorites. It's George Foreman versus Joe Frazier in the Jamaican National Stadium. You guys even know who these guys are? You know, Smoking Joe Frazier, from Philly. Toughest guy ever, the buzzsaw. And then George Foreman, hulking George Foreman, comes, walking in the ring with his grill, right? And Howard Cosell, the announcer. It's a clash of titans. But, the fight wasn't even 3 minutes old. Frazier had already been knocked down like 3 times. The second round was worse. There wouldn't be a third. 6 brain-bashing knockdowns in total. And on the 6th time, when Frazier hits the mat, Howard Cosell famously says what? Remember? Oh, peeps for all of you. That's right. Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. I can hear it in my mind. Some of you don't even know who Howard Cosell is, I'll bet. You can't go to heaven if you don't know who Howard Cosell is. Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. And in that moment, you could hear the angelic choir proclaim, down goes the devil. Down goes death. Down goes destruction. And I could look my friend Mike Stavlin in the eye and say, death does not have your will. Or say to the Nestlers, death does not have your faith. Death does not have your baby. No, death is dead. Death is doomed. Jesus has your baby. Jesus is the victor. And not only that, we not only have to say that he came to slay our enemy, but you know what? He came to die for us. That's the whole turning point in Jesus' life. Because Jesus knew the only way to get Lazarus out of the grave was to put himself in it. The only way to redeem our death was to experience his own. The jaws of death had to close on him so that the grave would not hold us forever. Oh, how he loves you. Oh, how he loves me. He gave his life. And so on this Easter day, we recognize Jesus as our Lord, because no greater love has any than this, than he laid down his life for another. Somebody laid down his life for you. Do you know him? He's your older brother. And so here's the point this Easter. What are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with all that? The Bible says that some people believed, others went out to kill Jesus. What will it be for you? And Lazarus, what does he have to do in order to get the good life, the eternal life? What does he have to do? Nothing. He was dead. What do you have to do? Some people say, I can't be a Christian. I haven't got what it takes. I'm not that good. And I can't do all that religious stuff. Guess what? No one else could do it either. That's why Jesus came to do it for us. Lazarus didn't do a thing. Jesus said to a dead man, get up, come to me. That is what he says to you and to me this day. You have a God thing inside of you, and it's cheering for you to say yes. To say yes to that voice, because listen, if you don't listen to that voice, your death day will not be a happy day. Come to him. Now, last, if you're a follower of Jesus, I got to tell you something too. You don't have to worry about death anymore. You don't have to worry. You know, some folks live with regret their whole life. They say, you know, I never had the career that I wanted. A marriage was never good for me. I didn't strike gold with marriage. Some people say, I wish I had more kids. I wish I had more grandkids. Some say, you know, I wish I'd traveled more. I always wanted to see the world, but I didn't. I missed it. I missed out. Are you kidding me? If you are in Jesus on your death day, you know what you'll say? This is the beginning of my life. My whole life is ahead of me. Do you really think you're going to miss out on anything? All eternity. It all belongs to you. You know, that's why we like stories like Beauty and the Beast and Cinderella and Little Red Riding Hood. They all ring true because they remind us that there is a happily ever after story that's true. Listen, if you know Jesus, then you know this. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. If anyone believes in me, even though they die, they will live again. And if anyone believes in me, they will never die. Do you believe that?